Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Well, we're going to try this and see how it goes. You know, everything that kind of gets started from the beginning, sometimes you got to work the kinks out of, so we're doing that today. But this is the delayed book club show. We were supposed to have it on Thursday, but you all know life happens. We got to roll with the punches. So we are reviewing, and we will, attempt at some point to announce what our next book will be for the in book club. By the way, it's the fourth Thursday of the month on G's Power Hour. Today we're reviewing Becoming by Michelle Obama, or at least part, we'll maybe just reviewing part of it because we all have busy lives and have a little trouble kind of getting settled. And so, Kath Booker, are you here? Good morning. Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, well, Kathy's supposed to be on with me. And then Stephanie Dukes, she is supposed to be on too, but she is seeing doctors right now. I did my doctor duty early this morning. I got to get that stuff out of the way early so I can continue to push on with life. But if you have read the book Becoming by Michelle Obama, we want to hear your thoughts on it. What appealed to you? What you liked? What you didn't like? What did you think? Did it give you any clearer insight into our former First Lady? So the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. So anyway, also want to hear your thoughts and also want to get your opinions if you have any books that you think we should be looking at too. So we'll take any suggestions that you have. And I know some of you are more avid readers than others. So would like to get your insight. So anyway, we're going to, while I wait for Kathy, because I was actually just texting with them, so we might have gotten our signals crossed. But while I'm waiting for them, I guess I'm just going to take a look at the daily rundown from LinkedIn, because that's my kind of one of my go-tos when I get a chance, especially when I'm on air. I know a lot of you have heard this morning about the Nike shoe that was to be released that is not going to be released. According to this blurb, Nike has pulled a USA-themed sneaker from its range after receiving objections from Colin Kaepernick. Now, most of you know Colin has become the new face of Nike controversially, because of his former stance in terms of the national anthem when he was playing football. Apparently, Mr. Kaepernick has told the company that he thought the American flag that they were going to put on the Air Max 1 USA, which was created in celebration of the 4th of July, he thought it was offensive due to its connection to slavery. Now, the flag that they were going to put on, for those of you that don't know, wasn't the current American flag as we know it today. It's the flag of the when they had the 13 colonies, original 13 colonies. So they had the 13 stars and the blue field, if I'm not mistaken, as well as the red and white stripes. So they decided not to issue it. Nike said apparently also stopped selling some products in China after a designer's support for Hong Kong protests sparked backlash and reportedly canceled the sneaker in May. So I was listening this morning to different corporations talk, different hosts on the radio as I was driving talk about this. And it's basically they were saying that, you know, when you get, I guess, to be a certain status in terms of the size of a company or the success of a company, you tend to weigh the pros and cons of what your moves are, and you hire researchers to look into if I go ahead, for example, with Nike, if I go ahead with the issuing of the sneaker, what happens? If I don't, what happens? So in Nike's case, they had to look at the customers they would lose versus the customers they would maintain and gain. And I guess they figured that it was, you know, of their benefit to not go forward with this sneaker. And, they figured that people who would be opposed to this move were probably not the people that were going to support them anyway. But anyway, Kathy Booker, are you there? Oh, goodness, I thought I heard some noise in the background. So we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to find out what happened to my book club, and we're going to come back. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you want to join the conversation, if you did get a chance to review the book, Becoming by Michelle Obama, call in and let us know what you think. The number is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Spreading the word of the Lord through music ministry on Gospel 107. We're live on NHISG 101.1 every Sunday. Gospel music from legends Lee Williams, Rance Allen, and Shirley Caesar. Join us for Sunday service delivered by Pastor Regina Johnson, Pastor Russell Moore, and Pastor Johnny Ray Noble. Bible study with Pastor Aaron B. Williams. And Christian Talk Radio with Pastor Annetta Watson, Pastor Annie Sally, Pastor Warren Sally, and Benita Coney. Gospel 107, every Sunday on Never Had It So Good, 101.1.
It's the sweetest name.
Hi there, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. The number, if you want to call in, is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. Kathy Booker, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Sorry about that.
That's all right. That's all right. Like I said, life happens. You know, we all, you know, kind of have... Sometimes it's hard to put brakes when you're going on one thing and then you're like, oh, I got to do something else. And, you know, it's like a car. It's like, oh, I want to turn there. I meant to turn there.
Exactly.
You have to kind of, it's hard to put the brakes on sometimes. Yeah. How you doing?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Just trying to do what needs to be done and doing it like it needs to be done.
Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy. So.
How are you?
What's that?
I said, how are you?
I'm a little.
You got going on.
Yeah, I know. I was going to manage stuff a little bit better getting back into some things, because I had one point in time I had to pull out of a bunch of stuff, just everything, just had to put those brakes on hard and just like, I can't do anything. But, you know, and so I started gradually getting back into stuff, and then, you know, but then I found myself, oh, yeah, I'll do that. Oh, yeah. You know, and then even when you say no, you still feel bad, you know, but you got to manage it. Otherwise, things will overwhelm you. So.
Oh, yes, it does. That's
so, okay, you all.
Yeah.
So now you and Stephanie got me into this. So, and like I told you all, actually, I had been thinking for a while about doing book club, but just getting back into reading on a regular basis because I'm going so much is challenging. So, but I guess I needed the challenge. So, but I know you all have been trying to work through the book, and I have to admit, everybody, I haven't. It's like I said, it's a work in progress. I haven't gotten all the way through the book yet, but I did think it was quite interesting, and it was an easier read than I thought because I don't know. I'm used to reading, I guess, more fiction, and
okay.
So for me, you know, in terms of reading for pleasure, because most of the time
okay.
I'm reading trade magazines, I'm reading something that I need for work. It's a,
exactly.
it's a learning
exactly.
process for me when I'm reading. It's not. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've actually gotten a chance to say, you know, sit down, you know, curl up. You know, so I try. And then also, too, I don't know if I burn, I guess because I'm burning my candle so much, by the time I sit down, it's hard for me to stay awake, which is odd because then when I go to bed, I can't go to sleep. So anyway.
Oh.
So I sat down here with my cup of coffee and have been going through the book, which, and the interesting thing that I found about the book, it was an easier read than I thought because it was, I guess, more in a way like fiction, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's told in more of that storytelling type of thing, which I appreciated.
It's a biography to me. And I think when reading through it, and thinking about the timeline that she
mm-hmm.
discussed, all of the different events in her life, I'm going, wow, because they're
mm-hmm.
younger than I am. And it's amazing to listen, you know, well, in reading, think about the struggles that were still going on at that time.
Right.
You know, but yet her and her brother and her husband were able to overcome some tremendous, well, I'm sure she has not expressed the racism to the depth that it was.
No.
Particularly talks about being the only one in a classroom.
Yeah. And that was a lot that I could relate to with that. Because I have been in situations where I was the only little black girl or a black child in a class or even in a school. I was in a school for about 4 or 5 years where with the exception of 1 year, I was the only black child in the whole school.
Wow.
There were no black teachers. You know, there were a lot of nuns. You know, but yeah, because in the only year that I was not the only black child was a year that a family, because we were near Patrick Air Force Base, and there was this family that got stationed there for a year, and they had, I think, 3 or 4 boys, and the boys went to school there that 1 year, and then they were, like, they disappeared. They were not there the next year.
You know, come to think about it, I'm going, I'm not, I think I was much older before I even saw a black nun. come to think about it. But I mean, she's a product of the public school system, you know, of Chicago, and I was going, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, to be able to,
you're from Chicago too, right?
From the Chicago area. My grandmother
from
lived
Chicago
in Hyde Park.
Okay.
And just listening and thinking about the school system during that time,
mm-hmm.
and how her mother was able to navigate her into a different school setting to make sure she was going to reach the potential that she needed even before going to college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thinking about the fact that she had very intelligent people in her family,
mm-hmm.
but because of the racism up north that nobody never wants to talk about,
right,
they weren't able to get the jobs actually in the fields that they were trained in or were experts.
So for you, I assume that there, when she's telling her story about her childhood and stuff, and you know, this place and that place and where she had to go and streets she had to walk or couldn't walk or whatever, a lot of this probably resonated with you.
Yeah, because you did have to, you know, I think it's interesting that she realized as she got older and took and became more, you know, you could look at her and tell that she was a, you know, adolescent female,
mm-hmm.
and that she began to realize she needed to be a lot more careful about how she, how and where she went.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true, you know, having to navigate, you know, that type of thing, and knowing that, you know, it's probably best to cross the street or not go through that bunch of boys that's standing on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Because it may not come out real well for you. And, I mean, even when she went to college, it was interesting that because her brother was already there, she, you know, she's saying he set the stage for her already.
Yeah.
And so
it was interesting to me. Because she strikes, and I guess she evolved to a woman that seems to have a lot of independence. But when she was talking about her brother and how she was used to her brother being in certain situations, I guess kind of changing
mm-hmm.
away, and then he wasn't there anymore. It was surprising to me because she does not seem that type of, I guess you could say, needy, in a sense, having to have that person, you know. But, you know, I guess we have experiences that all make us, you know, evolve into what we need to be at a certain time, you know. So I guess once he was out of the picture, then she had to do, you know, to morph into a different version of herself.
Right. And it wasn't that he was out of the picture.
Yeah, but
they were on the same campus, but her expectations of him to be there for her was greater than she actually experienced. And that's when she realized, you know, now this is about me having to come out and do the things that I need to do. Because my, you know, my big brother, you know, everybody knows him. But he had, you know, he had his own kind of stuff going on himself.
But then there was a point,
imagine,
too, he ended up going to a different school, I believe.
Right.
And so, you know, she was just kind of having to no longer, because there was some point where she was talking about, you know, casting herself as his little sister, and now she had to be just her.
All on her own.
Yeah.
She always impressed me as being a person who would, you know, would know situations she was in, and she planned for those situations.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good that, you know, even when she talks about talking to her mother and her mm-hmm. mother not necessarily telling them what to do, but suggesting to them, you can do what you need to do to work that situation out.
Right. So,
that was yeah. really great of her mother to give them those independent skills very early.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think that goes back to the Bible when they talk about training a child in the way the child should go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably the mom at some point just realized that she had done, I guess, as much training, and it was kind of up to them to kind of take what she's given them and use it accordingly, or, you know, or to make the mistakes on their own and learn from those mistakes.
Yeah, I thought, I was going, wow, of course Chicago is much, it didn't appear to be safe as it, you know, as it was then.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and it's even worse now. I've just recently talked to someone and they said it's just the feel of the city is different.
Yeah.
And to know that, you know, they both kind of came through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, did, you know, really well to go and deal on an all-white campus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people had assumptions about what black students were or were not according to affirmative action. And that was interesting to me because statistically, more whites were able to take advantage of affirmative action standards. And actually more whites were able to, you know, benefit from that law at the time. And I thought that was really interesting that she was approached with the only reason you're here is because of affirmative action.
Yeah. And I just think people don't really understand when you say affirmative action. I think people just, we have a tendency to just take labels and try to put things in a tidy little box and not really try to understand, you know, the depths of what affirmative action is, for example, in terms of labels and what it means and how it's, you know, to try to benefit everybody.
Yeah. Yep. And it did. I mean, it was put out, you know, as it was a minority to, you know, get everybody up on the same playing field. However, because of the way the program was written,
mm-hmm.
anyone could actually take advantage. Disadvantaged, you know, low-income whites then were able to take advantage of the same thing that disadvantaged low-economic blacks, Hispanics, you know, whoever were able
mm-hmm.
to the, you know, university that they probably would not have been able to get in other than those standards were set.
Yeah. Anyway, for those of you that are listening out there, we are reviewing Becoming by Michelle Obama. This is the first book that we are looking into in terms of our book club, which will be the fourth Thursday of each month, God willing, on Jeez Hour. We had to delay it a little bit because our other friend, Stephanie, she was dealing with some family stuff. And like I said, life happens. So you have to, you know, everything doesn't necessarily run like machinery, and even machines break down.
Okay.
You all know that. So, anyway.
Her?
Definitely. She may be on with us later, you know. But, you know, we're going to hold down the fort until she, you know, she's able to be with us. But in the meantime, if you've read the book, we'd like to get your opinion on the book too. The number's 516-387-1944. So the other thing that I thought was interesting, though, when she talked about her family, there were certain things that, you know, it seems like whether you're up north or whether you're down south, if you have a black family, there are certain dynamics that don't seem to change. And, you know, a lot of that had to deal with, like you were saying, about people studying and becoming, you know, really astute. But then when it's time to take what they've learned and stuff and to try to go out into the world and get the same, you know, benefits in terms of a job that others can get, there was a lot of discrimination to be dealt with. Because I thought about my own father where, you know, I mean, he was lucky. He did get some good jobs, but it was only after going through so many jobs and you know, last one hired, first one fired, and then also then you got the extra added bonus of discrimination. Discrimination sometimes will make you a lot stronger as an individual. And she seemed to have just really strong people that didn't play, you know, that understood how hard life was. And, you know, I mean, they were loving people, but at the same time, they were very disciplined people.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. And I mean, educated, well-read people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just by her, description of the various relatives.
Her aunt Robbie, especially, that she talks about that they lived in the same building with, you know, and how she was not only was one of the staples of her family, but one of the staples of the neighborhood because.
Exactly.
She was skilled and talented in terms of piano, so she couldn't necessarily go out and get a job as, let's say, a concert pianist or whatever. But she could teach, and you know, a lot of that's where the neighborhood children went to learn piano, and that's where Michelle grew up, you know, learning. She and her brother both learning piano, and.
Mm-hmm.
The story about her learning it at home and then for the first time going out and having to play in a totally different situation on public with an actual working and fully functional piano and how the difference was.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a funny. The one part about the book is that Michelle has such a vocabulary
mm-hmm.
that I found. Okay, I know what that word, but she's using it. Let me go and find out what that definition is, so I can make sure I understand how she's using that particular term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So This particular one is one that I have notes in as I'm going through and reading it. That's probably what's slow. You know, probably if I just read it just to be reading it, I probably
mm-hmm.
would have much quicker.
Yeah.
But I want to take a, you know, opportunity to digest it a little bit more than I would normally digest a. And I, you know, when I started to thinking about it, I really
mm-hmm.
don't read this type of book
mm-hmm.
very often.
Right.
A non-fictional type of person.
Yeah. Well, before we go any further, we're going to take a quick break. We are doing our book club. This is the first book that we're reviewing. It's Becoming by Michelle Obama. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I'm here with Kathy Booker. Stephanie Dukes will be with us hopefully soon, but she's been reviewing the book as well. And if you have read the book, we want to get your insight into the book as well. So the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arklatan. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I never had a so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are doing our book club. We were supposed to do it Thursday, but we had to take care of some things, so we're starting it today. We are reviewing Becoming by Michelle Obama. And the number, if you reviewed it or you have any questions, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. We have Kathy Booker on with us and waiting for Stephanie Dukes. Stephanie, are you there? I hear some background.
Yes, hi.
Oh, hi.
I'm
how are
here.
You? Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, hope all is well.
Yes, everything's got a great checkup and all's going great. I apologize for getting in on the last half hour.
That's okay. Not a problem. So, give us your insight into the book.
Oh, wow. I really, really connected with Michelle's story. It paralleled my life so much. I had to a couple of times take a good look and say, wait a minute, where was she? And then I realized, you know, we all grew up in that same era. Yeah, so our parents were a lot of the same, although we were in different parts of the United States. I just heard when you were talking about the piano lessons, and I was trying to figure out what was it about that everyone had to take piano lessons. Like, mm-hmm. This is not my gift, but I had to go to piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
What is the psyche behind that? I have to ask my grandmother, who's 100, will be 101 in October, what was the rationale in the community about that? But I think I enjoyed the different phases that she went through, from even telling about a boyfriend. Oh, and did you
mm-hmm.
hear her talking about smoking marijuana? Ah!
Yeah.
Michelle was real. Did she get real or what?
Well, but you know, that was the time that was going on, that it was, you know, more of a spirited, that's Woodstock and all of the, you know, kind of feel free to do what you need to do kind of college stuff that was going on during that time, you know.
Yes.
And I have, you know, the thing you were talking about the piano thing, it's at least because, as you know, I have a piano. It was passed down from my folks. It was passed down from my cousin to my mom. My mom always said, you know, one of the things about a piano was that if you could play piano, you could walk into almost any scenario and I guess be popular or whatever, or have something to share, because people, if you could play the piano, people, you know, in a social setting would gather around the piano and would listen, or you would sing with people.
Mm-hmm.
So having that skill and having that gift made you, I guess, a little bit more desirable in terms of the company that you were with.
Okay. Yeah, we had a piano in our home too. I don't have one in my home now. But yeah, we grew up with that piano sitting there and my knuckles hurting. I'm like, this is not my gift.
Well, my mom, she started me with lessons, and she said she kind of regretted it because I actually used to play by ear, and I used to be a very good player by ear, and so she sent me to lessons because she wanted me to learn the notes, and I got, I guess, bored with the lessons. I didn't want to practice, and so she almost wished she had not sent me the lessons and let me just go ahead and play by ear, because I kind of lost, I guess, something and didn't really go back to it. I keep trying to go back to it, you know, and doing the notes are helpful, you know, but I do better if I can sit there and kind of run things over in my head and just listen and then work on the keys from there.
Yes. The other part I liked about her story was when she was talking about fitting in, going to school and fitting in, you know, moving from elementary to middle and into college, and how we try to find our balance of fitting in, and where we're used to being top over here, then now go and join another people who are just as top dogs as you are, and then trying to find your footing in that group. I liked that, and I liked that she said she learned just to be proud of being you, who you are.
Right.
Yes.
I related to the part that she talked about when she would go over to certain relatives' house and the young relatives would kind of get together and the old relatives would get together, and how she got confronted by one of her cousins about why she talked white. I truly relate to that because my mother was a stickler in terms of diction and speaking properly, because she wanted me to be able to fit in with any type of company that I was keeping. So, and especially, but you know, I used to also go up to New York during the summer, and they spoke a little differently than they do down here. So I would come back, and it wasn't a pretense thing, but I had picked up a little bit more of the way people would talk other places when I came home, and then I would get questioned by relatives here, why are you talking like that? Why you talk white? You know, especially when I went to Catholic school for a little bit, you know.
Exactly.
And it makes you question and second guess yourself, and then if you're not really self-confident like I wasn't, you know, she had a lot more self-confidence than I had coming up. But it makes you second guess yourself and question, and you want to try to fit in like everybody else. So then, you know, I started trying to talk more slang and stuff, and really did not sit well with my mom at all.
But, you know, you would have thought, I, from the outside before reading this book, I would have thought Michelle had super confidence and just was this. But she comes through so real in how she really didn't have that confidence, and she had to fight to find that balance. And she, you know, once she finds her balance in places, she was not afraid to step out, but she was so real about that balance, even like finding the balance with her auntie. And I think that was her first interaction in challenging and trying to make sure she could compete and hold her ground amongst her friends and family. But yes, we all, I think, I don't know about Kathy, but I've gone through that same thing of, as we say, why do you talk white or talking proper?
Yeah.
Scenario.
I,
And the other reason I say that she was
Kathy was saying something.
Oh, okay, Kathy, what were you saying? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I'm not sure because where I went to school at, we were expected to have good diction. So if that's off white, and I have not myself been personally told that, but just by virtue of my name being Kathy Ann Hazley, I can tell you when I started looking for work, when I would show up at jobs in Chicago for interviewing, you know, they would think that I was not black.
Yeah, that happened to me in Tampa. With a name like Gretchen, and I went into for a job interview, and the guy came out looking all around, and I'm the only person sitting in the receptionist area. The guy comes out and looking all around and looking for Gretchen, you know, like, yes. And then all of a sudden, the job is no longer available.
Exactly. Exactly, and I'm they talk to you over the phone, and so I'm sure whatever their imagination of how black sound up north was not what I sounded like at all. So when I showed up, I had to show them my life. This is downtown Chicago.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and it was interesting when Michelle talked about those being in those kind of situations that we all just talked about, being the only black in a room and having to fight for your blackness, you know, having to fight for your heritage. And for us, it's, you're fighting for two things. We had to fight to be a woman and to be black, you know, or African-American. So we had a double battle in the room, and I liked how she talked about that in insisting that the firm hire more people of minority, more women, more African-Americans. And she was real about that. And then when she took that plunge to say, I'm not happy as being a lawyer, I was like, girl, six figures, what?
Yeah, and I think go on, Stephanie.
And taking that plunge is just was so interesting how everything really led up to how the twist in our lives is finding our happiness. And I always wondered when they were saying, you know, she was a hospital administrator, ran a nonprofit, how all of that really was her path to being First Lady.
Exactly. And I think it's interesting, though, I don't know, I was, you know, quickly going through it. And the one thing that she has talked about before was having to step back when I did decide to run for political office, and how everything about her life just kind of changed in reference to him and her as his wife, not about what she did do, those kind of things you're talking about, but now she is Barack's wife.
Yes.
But I was trying to think, out of all of the president's wives, the education, her education, seems to be much more superior. Not to say that there were you know, wives that were not, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt, that, you know, of all, we have to say, was, you know, phenomenal First Lady. But, you know, just to think about it, her having all of that education, being a lawyer as well, that she was not given the same esteem as other first ladies that have sat in that position. I thought that that was interesting.
Well, but I mean, in terms of like modern day first ladies, she and probably Hillary Clinton, probably, if you had to look at the two of them, I would think in terms of what they had to kind of put on the back burner, in terms of what their lives would have been had their spouses not run for president, that just would have been the dynamic would have been totally different. If we were more accepting of women in that higher office during the times that they were first ladies, they would have probably been the ones that would have been in that role as president and not their husbands, because they just seemed like they had a lot more to bring to the table.
Well, I think it's probably true with Hillary, but I think because Hillary was really the push with Bill, but I think for Michelle, in listening to, you know, reading her story and really thinking about her movement, I think that the turns that her life has taken with the different occupations and her now have been first lady, I think now she would make a better president than she did when Barack had all of the energy, when he fulfilled his destiny. And his movement through his destiny helped her to really find Michelle. Like I had a niece just tell me, you know, she says, I didn't find the real me until I went off to school. And I looked in the mirror one day and said, yes, this is who I am and I want to be. And I think listening to my niece and reading Michelle's story where Barack challenged her, challenged her, where Hillary and you know, I've read her and Bill's story, she was really the push and drive behind him. She was the mastermind where, no, let's go this way, let's do that, where he had drive, she had direction. She was the compass there and knew which way to go with, and I think it was the reverse for Barack and Michelle. He knew where he was going, and like she told him, she says, hey, I'll make it an interesting ride, and he challenged her. Till I think now, if she ran for president, she would be outstanding. Phenomenal.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We are talking about Becoming by Michelle Obama. I am here with Kathy Booker and Stephanie Dukes. And the number, if you want to join the conversation, is 516-387-1944. When we come back, we'll finish talking about this, and also we're going to announce our next book. So just stay with us. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Dibb Simmons with Farrell Realty, but you know me as G from G's Power Hour. Much of the time when I'm not engaging with you on my show, I'm dealing in real estate in beautiful Central Florida. But because I'm here, that doesn't mean I can't help you wherever you are. So if you're looking to buy, invest, relocate, rent, or sell, please give me a call at 407-968-9387. That's 407-968-9387, and let me help you with your real estate needs.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7000. 7720 Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi there. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today here with Kathy Booker and Stephanie Dukes. We are looking at Becoming by Michelle Obama. If you've got a chance to look at it, we'd like to hear your insight on it. The number is 516-387-1944. So I was thinking about what you were saying, Stephanie, and you're kind of right, because I think, to be honest, even though Michelle would make a great president, I don't think that was where her choice was in terms of where she wanted to go with her life, with the direction of her life. Hillary, I think, might have been a little bit more ambitious in the political arena, whereas Michelle, more, I guess, community-driven, especially when she talks about her father and what her father did, going to into the community on a regular basis and trying to make sure that, you know, the community was satisfied and things, and how he could help, and going back to the officials in the area where they lived to try to make sure that certain issues were addressed.
Yes, and I think that was, it's so interesting. We don't realize how our parents' lives shape our lives. But because of the way her parents, uncles, and during that time, African-Americans had to obtain jobs through unions, fraternal organizations, that her father was determined to be kind of like what we call now precinct captains here in the South, and went into homes to make that difference. And I was so struck about when she was talking, I think all of us have a punch bowl in our house from when our families used to have those gatherings when there was lace tablecloths and the punch bowl set. And I had forgot the, say that, the Dorleys, that social interaction that took place around those tables that talked about forging the community forward, the education of our children. We do very, very little of that unless something happens. And I won't say us, because I know the three of us are very active within our communities. But within the African-American community that I have seen here in this next generational move, that we see very little of that, that we have to take more of an active role. I think, Gretchen, when we talked about a political talk a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about the educational, you know, educating people a little bit more, and that education took place in our homes like that. Around those, so when she was talking about that, that's the idea that came to mind, was that those punch bowl sets and the lace tablecloths and, you know, sitting there, two to three couples, the kids in the next, you know, dining room, kitchen area.
Right.
And those conversations taking place a little at a time, till the talk went through town. And I just want to mention the other thing I liked, because it related to the, you know, what we are doing here, with what your show does, Gretchen, is in high school, she builds a relationship with Jesse Jackson's daughter. Others who went on to accomplish things and make a difference in life. And that's what I loved about college. We connected with people who took our, we took our training to another level, our thought patterns, and broke them out of the shell and began to grow and prosper with them, each in our own way. I think about, Gretchen, you remember when Carl used to walk across campus with a tie on every day going to class when we were at the University of South Florida? You know? And Carl is now a judge. He is a judge in Miami in family court. because
wow.
that was his passion. Children was his passion. And I think about that, that we were all in the struggle together, pushing each other to become more, help each other to become more. And it was all about a cause. It wasn't about because we wanted to be this great person. It was because we were all working towards a better cause.
Mm-hmm.
And everything just happened from there.
I was thinking when you were talking about that, about, and I don't remember where I heard it or saw it, but it was something about dressing like who you want to become, not necessarily like who you are, but who you, the person that you want to become, the position that you want to be in, you have to dress and act like you're already there.
And that's what Carl would do. We always saw him walking across campus with that tie and that long, short sleeve, a long sleeve shirt on, going to class.
Yeah, because hauling across class is not how you want to, you don't necessarily want to dress up to be hauling across campus to go to class.
Yeah, Michelle talked about a friend of hers. I forgot the name of her, but the friend where we read about that dies because she was bold. She was being bold. She was about living life happy.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, it's your cause. It's what is it your life? And I think that's kind of how life should be. What makes us happy?
Yeah.
Long as you're doing something that's not hurting anyone else, that makes you happy and bringing joy to others.
But let me say this on top of that, Stephanie. I think we have to be careful in terms of what happiness is, because a lot of times we let other people define what should make us happy, and sometimes we don't fit into that mold. We get ridiculed, and that's where I say, like, the self-confidence is really important, and where that comes in, because you're only going to be truly happy if you're true to yourself, you know, the thing that makes you happy, and not necessarily trying to accomplish what other people think you should be accomplishing in your life.
Right.
And Michelle did that when she made that transition from a lawyer to another profession. What really made her happy? And I liked how she did that. She investigated. She asked other people before just jumping out there and just saying, oh, I'm going to do something else. And like her mother said, oh, really? Okay. she really thought it through and then made the transition. And once she had her feelers out there and saw, okay, how can I use what I have without having to start all the way over and find happiness for me, because she had been judged by what other people thought, what Craig had done, where Craig was. So
right.
I agree with that. I agree.
Yeah. If you haven't had a chance to read Becoming by Michelle Obama, please go and get a copy. If you can't buy one, the library probably has them. A friend probably has it. You know, but take the time out to read it. It's a good read, and I'm glad we got started on this journey trying to do the book club. So we are announcing another book, and I think we've decided on this book, or I've decided on it anyway, you know, because there's a lot of good stuff out there. This is by an author named Crystal Sital, and I may not be pronouncing the word wrong. She's a Hunter College graduate. She was born and raised in Trinidad, and she moved with her family to the U.S. in the 90s. This book is entitled Secrets We Kept, Three Women of Trinidad, Secrets We Kept. So I'm going to try to post this information on the G's Power Hour Facebook page so you can get a chance to pull the book, and, you know, and it's on Amazon. I do know that it's probably is in Barnes & Noble as well, but it's by Crystal A. Sital, Sital, Secrets We Kept. Ladies, thank you for helping me embark on this journey. I really appreciate it. I appreciate, you know, I always appreciate a challenge. This is a good one.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. This is the G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. Have a very blessed day, everyone. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Up your mouth.